The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
The humanity of the priest is a bridge to encountering Christ and should not be a barrier. People always say, like, well, if you weren't a priest, what would you be doing? And I'm like, it's hard for me to think of anything other than what I'm doing.
That's what we're striving to discern, is what is God's plan, his dream, his will, his desire for me, where I'm going to be most fulfilled. And it really is through living a sacramental life that is absolutely going to support that.
When you're married, you have to realize it's not just you anymore. It's you and your wife and God.
If you desire to be truly happy, then your life should not be about you.
Welcome to God Calling, our locally produced program that explores the various vocations available to Catholics in all walks of life. Now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Thanks for joining us once again. This is Paul Orlowski. I'm with Father John Betters today. Father, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here today.
You've got your hands full out there in the Euclid area, don't you? Lots of, well, merged parishes, but you were originally at St. William's?
Correct. I started actually at St. Robert and William. I came on the day they merged St. Robert and St. William together, and I've been there since 2010. And then in 2018, I took on St. John of the Cross, which is 2 miles up the road,
right,
which is the merger of St. Felicitas and St. Paul's. So four foundational parishes, but 2 parishes now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, we'll get back to that, but tell me about growing up, Father. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Sheffield Lake and then Westlake. I am the oldest of 6 kids. It's a blessing. There's 5 boys and a girl. Mm-hmm. We had a pretty good childhood. I loved it. I went to St. Thomas in Sheffield Lake and then St. Bernadette's, and then I went to St. Ignatius for high school. Yeah, pretty normal.
Yeah.
Childhood, very involved in St. Bernadette's. My parents were in music ministry. I was not given that gift, so I had to watch my brothers while they did their music ministry, but it was a blessing.
Yeah. Now, what about your prayer life? Is it grace before meals, that sort of thing? Or
Yeah, we did a lot of the typical traditional Catholic, you know, family traditions. May and October were very important months with the Blessed Mother. We always had a May altar. We, of course, did prayer before meals. We did rosary. Just being very involved in the parish, you know, in the sense of anytime there was a good speaker or a spiritual opportunity, we would go as a family. We really kind of centered our lives around the parish, and mm-hmm. most of our friends were from our parish.
Yeah. How important was that in your formation?
I think it was very important, and I love the fact that the parish was the center of our lives. I certainly lament that that's not the truth or the reality much anymore. Mm-hmm. But it was a very active, vibrant parish with some great families and some solid friendships. And even though I don't get back to the west side too often because of being on the east side, you know, anytime I'm back there, there's a great sense of history and foundation that is there. And so I think that's so important. I can think of several times just being in the church, especially in youth group, you know, being able to be there to just pray and have an encounter with the Lord.
Yeah, important stuff.
Yeah.
When did you first get an inkling?
So I tell people there are kind of 4 moments that I kind of thought about the priesthood.
Uh-huh.
None of them are that exciting, but yet they all kind of added up to me eventually saying yes to at least considering the seminary. And then, of course, the Lord did the rest of the work in the seminary. But when I was in first grade, my mom and dad told me they were pregnant, and I was so excited that I'd have another brother or sister. And then just a couple days later, she said, you know, that baby had gone to heaven. She had a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
And as young parents and as the oldest, they were really struggling with that. So they invited our pastor, Father McCaffrey. He was an older man. He was probably in his 70s at the time, over to talk to me. And I just remember thinking how awesome it was that he came to talk to me. Now, ironically, I never talked to him. I hid under my bed because I was too shy to talk to him. But that moment just was ingrained in my heart. You know, and again, I ended up being a server for him and, you know, of course, got to know him in the years following, but that just always stuck with me that he was willing to come and visit me. You know, in many ways, I thought that was the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
We also had the Notre Dame sisters at St. Thomas, and I had several great sisters who taught me. And then in fifth grade, actually, the associate priest came over, and he took the boys off and to talk to us about going to the seminary. And he said, someone asked the question, what's a day in the life of the seminary like? And he said, you get up in the morning and you have a cigarette, and then you go to breakfast and you have a cigarette, and you go to class and you have a cigarette. And so This was, of course, before all the bad smoke. We knew how bad smoking was. So I went home and told my mom I was going to be a priest. And she said, oh, because they do lots of nice, you know, good things for people. And I said, no, they get to smoke like every hour. I never took up smoking, but,
that's a good
you know, Father Loya, who was our spiritual director in the seminary, always said, you know, God uses some funny things to get you to open up your heart and your mind. And so if it was a cigarette, I guess that worked for me.
Yeah.
And then at St. Ignatius High School, I had the opportunity to go to Malachy House. Malachy House, you know, was one of the first hospices in this area, so to speak. It was brand new at the time. And not too many Ignatius guys got to go there, but I was either smart enough or dumb enough, I'm not sure, to put it on my wish list of the places I was willing to do my sophomore service. And so I spent a day there a week for a semester, and just holding the hands of the dying really kind of touched my heart. Then the final thing that did it for me was I took a year off of school. I did 2 years of college and then just couldn't figure out my life, and was managing a bagel store. And there was a young lady working for me who we had to let go because she was taking the bagels at the end of the night to a homeless shelter, which unfortunately was against our policy.
Oh, boy.
And so unfortunately she had to be let go. But she was a single mother. She worked two jobs. And I just thought to myself, there's something better that I could do for her. And so I went back. I went home and I asked my parents, could I go back to school? And so I did. Went back to John Carroll. Met at the time Father Damien Ferentz, my classmate.
Sure.
And he convinced me to come to the seminary. And I did. Mm-hmm. Didn't look back.
You know, the very first item, the priest just coming to the house. You didn't talk to him. Yeah. Under the bed, as you say. But how important is that, knowing somebody's there for you, somebody cares about you, and that paints a picture in a little kid's mind of a priest as a god, I suppose, or a loving source or something. Very important, I would guess.
Yeah, very important. I think it's very important that the priest, a priest be present in the lives of the young people in appropriate ways. And, you know, I spend a lot of my time personally supporting Catholic schools. I'm leading a strategic plan for our diocese for Catholic schools, and it's one of the heart of that plan for me is to make sure the priests are present in the school, just because I think the presence of just saying hello, you know, going in the classroom. One of my things to do is I don't necessarily teach lessons to them, but I allow them to ask me questions, you know, what's on their heart, what's on their mind. And they, you know, we have some great discussions, or, you know, even going out in the playground or, you know, in the lunchroom, just saying hi. You never know who you could touch.
Yeah. Some of the, well, all of the seminarians are taking classes at John Carroll. How important to be in classes with those guys and talk to those guys and maybe figure it out?
Yeah. Well, the story is that's how I, you know, got to know Father Damien. We were just in a class together, and I actually, there were a couple of their seminarians in that class as well. And, you know, just started talking to them. And it's because of their conversations that kind of opened up my ears to make that final decision.
Very important stuff.
Absolutely.
We're going to be back on God Calling right after these messages. If you'll stay tuned, I hope you will stay with us too, Father.
I will.
This is AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Father John Betters is our guest here on God Calling today, a guy with lots of parishes, but you talk about being an example for other people. Someone from my parish, Father Scott Goodfellow, one of your guys, he says you were a big deal in his life.
Yeah, Father Scott was... I never thought I'd have the opportunity to have a newly ordained at my parish. It was a wonderful opportunity to have a newly ordained. You know, the parish had been only 4 years old after the merger when he came, and it was just great to have that life and that energy there for 4 years. And he just brought so much goodness to our parish. They still talk about him. In fact, he's leading a pilgrimage to the Holy Land next year. He convinced me to go with him.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
So now about half the group is our people, but I think it's because they wanted to be with him. He just brought a beautiful spirit to the church, and especially in his preaching. He's a great preacher.
Well, if he was there, you've met his mother.
Oh, I have met Mrs. Goodfellow. Mrs. Goodfellow, actually, here's a little known fact. She takes care of my dog. Actually, it's her dog now, but I had a dog and just didn't have the lifestyle for it, and she loves animals, so she took my dog Wags, and he's 16 years old and lives a better life than most humans. But, she's a good woman.
Yeah, I see her on Sundays.
Yeah.
I talked to her before he was on the show and asked, how can I surprise him? She goes, well, we used to call him Scott or the Otter.
Yes,
Otters. And so I popped it to him on the show.
Yeah.
And then I had to admit I was Paulie Wall. I never should have brought that up.
Yeah.
But how much did you enjoy that mentoring role to a newly ordained?
I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed being a mentor, but, you know, it's not only what I do for them, it's what they do for me. You know, they kind of remind me of my goodness. Not only did I have Father Scott, but I've almost every year had a seminarian in some role, doing some pastoral work in the parish. And it's just good to hang around those guys. They kind of keep you honest, so to speak, and keep you on track. They're a blessing, and they, you know, sometimes you get caught up in the day-to-day, the nitty-gritty of being a pastor, and conversations with them, or when they ask you, why do you do it this way, or why didn't you do it that way? You kind of remember why you became a priest and, you know, reconnect it to God, because there's a lot of distractions right now that, out in the world. And even as a pastor, just dealing with some of the stuff we deal with, it can be difficult. The guys have been such a blessing. Also to be able to say, hey, why not try this? You know, sometimes you get stuck in routines, and these younger guys, you know, kind of challenge you to do it. Now, sometimes you just, I had a great first pastor, Father Tom Johns, who let me make my mistakes, and he was there to help me clean up. So I've always tried to do that, you know, even though I know that it's probably not going to work. I let the guys do it, and, you know, and we work together to see how it works.
Tell me about the seminary. It's a tough road to hoe.
Yeah, I enjoyed my seminary time. It was a great time to be in the seminary. I was at Borromeo Seminary for my second semester, junior year, and then my senior year. So I got a taste of Borromeo. You know, I was already at John Carroll, so there was a natural transition. I was already studying philosophy and theology, so I was right there. I really enjoyed the camaraderie of the guys. But the second thing that was really important to me in the seminary was at St. Mary's Seminary in the graduate school was being able to do my field work in Cleveland. You know, throughout my time, in fact, even to this day, sometimes you'll go to seminaries that are regional and you meet the guys, you know, and their diocese might be, you know, a couple hours away, or they're learning. All of the professors that taught me are ministers in Cleveland. In fact, two of them now are retired, Father Bednar and Father Loya, and they're living with me at St. John of the Cross.
Okay.
And, you know, so it was just a great opportunity to understand Cleveland. You know, the bishop, Bishop Pilla, was a bishop at the time. You know, he was at the seminary quite a bit, and we got to interact with him and develop a relationship with him. You know, it wasn't like on ordination he learned my name. You know, he knew my name from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I think just also being able to pray together, those were some significant moments. You know, whether it be a simple holy hour on Tuesday night or just praying morning prayer together. In fact, there are days that I crave that. Any opportunity I have to pray, the office and community is a great opportunity. And I think back to the seminary of doing that on a regular basis. I wouldn't want to be a religious order priest. You know, that's just not my call. My call is in the parish and diocesan priesthood. But there's something about praying that in community.
And using your skills that you learned as a priest and being in various places, you're out of the newly merged parish when it was very controversial at that time. So how do you bring those two together? And then subsequent to that, even others all together into community?
Yeah. You know, we were blessed. We were one of the successful mergers. Well, they're really all in the end successful. We had success pretty early on. And I attribute that to two things. One, both of the previous pastors prepared the people well. And they said this. They said, you know, we can either be really sad and we can be really angry and bitter, or we can celebrate the past and build something awesome in the future. And they kind of took that attitude. The other thing that we did was, you know, while we appreciated the past, I think sometimes people can get stuck there and you just have to make decisions and you just have to move forward. And you have to say, let's create our new traditions. Let's create our new experiences. Let's make, you know, all the beautiful holidays that you celebrate that are so beautiful our own. And we did that pretty early on and pretty deliberately. And we also did a nice mix of both. You know, right away, you know, we merged some of the worship spaces together. You know, we brought, for example, St. William's had no statues. They had all these beautiful mosaics, but no statues. Well, St. Robert's had lots of statues, so we did a nice mix of the mosaics and the statues. And we found homes for, you know, the ones we moved from the church throughout the property. So it wasn't like we were just giving them away or getting rid of them. The other thing that happened that was pretty good was that St. Robert's was bought by the city for future development. And they tore it down pretty quickly. It wasn't the nicest of buildings. It, you know, lots of memories and stuff. It was never meant to be a permanent church. It was actually a hall on top of a school that just never really flourished. So I think having the church gone and it's just green space right now, it's just not a reminder. But we brought, actually the day they tore it down, they brought me the cornerstone. And so the cornerstone is in front of St. William's. And then they brought us these two concrete crosses that were on top of the building.
Oh, wonderful.
And they're sitting on our property as well. So there's bits and pieces.
Bishop Lennon, who I knew very, very well from morning mass down at the cathedral, he loved the way Euclid worked out.
Yeah.
Because I think he originally wanted six down to four. And the groups came back and said three is the number. And he was delighted the way that that worked out. And obviously you were part of it.
And actually, you know, we're working now with St. John the Cross and then St. Robert and William. We are really working to bring them together. not to merge. I think it could be two parish communities, but sharing our resources and collaborating so that we both can be our own unique but importantly vibrant parish communities.
Is there a difference now, 10 years later or however many years later, in what people think or how their attitudes toward merging or joining together?
For the most part, you know, it's been 13 years. For the most part, people don't talk about it too much anymore. You know, it's just kind of like, wasn't this the way we always were? But there are times where, you know, it will come up. Again, we just kind of talk through it. Now it's kind of like when you talk to a war veteran, you know, they forget all the pain and the struggles, but they tell you about their scar and they, you know, they make it really heroic almost. And usually it is. We talk very positively about it.
Yeah. Father, if you'll stay right there, we'll be right back on God Calling. This is Paul Orlowski on AM 1260 The Rock. The program is God Calling. Back with Father John Betters right after this. Thanks for staying with us. This is Paul Orlowski with Father John Betters on God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Father, I read something of yours, and why do you love being a Catholic? Basically, because the Eucharist is the most meaningful in our faith. Tell me about that.
I'm really excited about this Eucharistic revival. Because for me, at the center of it, it's that connection to Jesus. We actually just had a speaker a couple weeks ago at the parish, Tim Francis, and he was talking about Eucharistic miracles. And while that was interesting, I'm not saying it wasn't, he said something that was so powerful that, of course, I knew in my head from theology classes and stuff, but he talked about how at the Mass, you are connecting yourself directly to that moment where Christ died for you. Mm-hmm. And they just paused and looked in the church. And it was one of those moments where I was like, wow. And I'm just looking at the crucifix that I see every day in the church and just realizing that the Lord did that for me. Mm-hmm. And then he also talked about that, and I had forgotten that Padre Pio said this, that they asked Padre Pio, how could he be standing on his feet all day with the stigmata? And he said, I can stand at Mass because I'm not standing, I'm hanging on the cross with Jesus as I preside at Mass.
Wow.
Again, I had read that and kept it in my head, but had never really prayed that. And when he's brought that up, it just kind of, for me, summarizes that, is that the Eucharist is that connection to the moment when the Lord laid down his life for me personally and makes it very intimate.
I don't remember whose quote it was, but somebody said in the Eucharist that Jesus in the womb was no closer to Mary than to us. I don't remember who said it.
But, right, right.
But anyway, the Eucharistic revival, tell me about it. You're on the board?
No. Okay. I'm just very excited about the Eucharistic revival. We're doing lots of things. In fact, tonight we have Bishop Booth coming to talk about the real presence. One of the things we did at St. Robert William to prepare for it is we actually got a new tabernacle and moved the tabernacle back to the center of the church. Actually, I should say moved it to the center of the church. It was never in the center where St. William's was a church after Vatican Council when it became a little more popular to put it off to the side. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't care about the theology of where the tabernacle is. I don't want to seem trite about that. But for me, it was putting Christ right in the center of our lives. And so I've seen a real sense of reverence and a real sense of people talking about it within the parish. They could be talking about, oh, I was working on this. And I thought, okay, no, I have to put Christ in the center. I have to put Christ in the center. So, I mean, obviously we did something physical, but it was also about trying to reinvent that in our lives that are reestablish that centrality of Christ. The other thing we're doing very specifically is we're introducing adoration to our school students. So actually starting this month, the kindergartners will spend 10 minutes and then all the way up to eighth grade will hopefully spend an hour.
Mm-hmm.
In September, they did it in their classrooms, not with the Eucharist, but just practice silence and sitting still.
Teachers love you.
Yeah. So now this month we're going to take them over to the church. You know, I'm in a parish that our school is 60% non-Catholics and 40% Catholics. So it's funny, the non-Catholics love learning about all the Catholic traditions and they're very excited about it. So, and actually even some of the parents who don't quite get what the Eucharist is, you know, they've been asking me some questions. They're attracted to the silence, you know, and the calming of the kids. But I could tell already that some conversations are sparking some interest as they ask me more about, you know, what is the real presence of Christ, you know, and how is he truly present to us right there? And so that makes me excited to think people are asking questions and showing a beautiful curiosity.
You made Bishop Lennon happy on another score because he liked the tabernacle.
Oh, yes, yes.
Very much so.
Yes.
Was pretty clear about that.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, did you spend some time at St. Mary's in Hudson?
I did. I spent 2.5 wonderful years at St. Mary's in Hudson.
And the vocations that come out of that place.
Yes.
Phenomenal.
Yes. You know, it was interesting. When I first got there, I replaced Father Damien, who was my classmate. We were ordained together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he certainly had a major part of that setting a vocation culture. But I remember the first one that kind of got ordained, there were several before, but the one that kind of sparked the almost an ordination every year was Father Steve Flynn. And I was there when Father Steve got ordained and had his first Mass. And during the Mass, I know I shouldn't have done this, but I leaned over to him and I said, you know, wasn't it great that Damien helped you with your vocation? And he said, it wasn't Damien, it was Life Teen.
Oh,
and okay. I realized from that moment forward, as I began talking to all the guys who have gone through, that it was truly, I think, the Life Teen experience, the respect that parish has for Life Teen, and the integral part that teens play in the life of the parish. Not just in the Life Teen, like on Sunday nights, the Life Nights, but I think they're an integral part of that parish 7 days a week. And I think that has created the vocation culture.
Such an important time in a young man's life, mm-hmm. or woman too, but you know, they can go the other way.
Right.
Stop going to church or,
right.
You know, Mom, I went.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing, as opposed to, mm-hmm. You've been recognized for your outreach efforts, and particularly having to do with Catholic education. Does that get back to the non-Catholics who now maybe are asking questions and who knows, maybe a conversion?
Well, you know, Bishop Perez said this, and actually we think lots of bishops claim to have said this, so we don't know who actually said it. But he reminded us that we educate not because they're Catholic, but because we're Catholic, and that it's something that the Catholic Church knows how to do very well. Education, you know, we have some of the top schools probably in the world, in the country. And I think in a place where you're able to talk about, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, you know, all those kinds of things, plus God, and weave all that together is just a very healthy environment. The second thing that I think is so important in education is that, you know, when I baptize someone, I say to the parents, I say, you will be the first of the teachers and you'll be the best of the teachers. I think there's an attitude of partnering with parents to really help them fulfill their role that Catholic schools can do well.
Mm-hmm. I saw your kind of priorities for what's going on with here, and you said it very well. The foundation, I suppose, mm-hmm. the past, the present, the Christian message is needed more than ever now.
Yeah.
We certainly know that. And then we've got an incredible future lying ahead of us.
Yeah, and this is actually a very exciting time for Catholic schools. I know you're talking about my vocation story, but you know, I'll give a little plug to the fact that we live in a state that has now enacted state, you know, school choice.
Mm-hmm.
Every single child in the state of Ohio has an opportunity to get some state assistance for their school, and that is awesome. You know, it's not so much we as the schools are taking the money, but it's being given to the parents to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will open it up. There's lots of reasons why sometimes people don't choose our schools, but pretty high up there has been financial.
I read a study of some of the best schools in the country. It was in online or wherever I saw it, cleveland.com, I think. But there were like 15 or 20 schools, and like 6 or 8 of them were Catholic schools.
Correct.
Around the country. And that's, we're probably 5% of the schools in the country, but that much was being good said about them.
Correct.
Father John Betters, thanks for joining us on God Calling.
It was great to be
here.
Thank you.
It was great talking to you.
Thanks.
This is God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock. I'm Paul Orlowski. We hope you'll join us next week at this very same time.
Thank you for listening to God Calling. If you missed part of today's show or you just want to hear it again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab. And remember, wherever you are in life, God is calling you.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.